The station. Welcome to the station, the Babylon 5 podcast.
Okay, welcome to the station. I'm Steve.
This is Mitch, and today is episode number 8.
And the sky full of stars. Now, before we get into this, I want to give a little shout-out to our producer, Jeff. Hi, Jeff. Jeff is nonchalantly pretending to ignore me right now.
We all do.
Aww. Aren't we all just a sweet, happy family here?
No, we hate you.
Aww.
Yeah, right.
Anyway, in a sky full of stars. Yeah, Jeff records us here, Infinite Productions, here in Omaha, Nebraska. I don't know if any of you knew where we were, but yep, that's where we are.
Wait, where on Earth?
Well,
I thought we were recording this in orbit of Epsilon 3.
You know, no. Well, that's where your remote is. My remote is on a moon that orbits the Voron homeworld.
Yes, you have a very large moon, but I wish you would turn around.
Jeff, our producer, is enjoying every moment of this.
Yes. Okay, and the sky full of stars where Sinclair. I love that.
Yeah, they put the accent right over that I.
Not they, he. When he tries to call maintenance, when he's alone on the station, Sinclair to maintenance. I love that. Okay, so Sinclair gets kidnapped by two men who are known only in the script as Night 1 and Night 2. They're never actually identified on screen as who they are. Night 1 originally was supposed to go to Walter Koenig. The role eventually went to Christopher Neame, and we talked about that earlier. When Walter was unavailable due to the heart attack, it then went to the Prisoner star, Patrick McGoohan. Unfortunately, he was wanting to work, but he was out of the country for filming and had to decline as well, so it eventually went to Christopher Neame, and he did a remarkable job on it. I mean, it is so memorable. Even today, I will see a commercial where he's playing this chef that's, like, teaching people, and I'm like, oh, that's the guy from Babylon 5. I'm sure I'm not the only one who does that. Or maybe it's just me. I don't know.
I would assume it's just you.
So what they're trying to do is figure out what happened at the Battle of the Line? Because all that's officially been known is the Minbari surrendered. They were at Earth. They had Earth on its knees. They could have sent one more blow and all of humanity would have been wiped out. And they surrendered.
They just stopped fighting. That's been the biggest
question,
underlying question of everything going on. Humanity really stepped in it really bad when back in 2245, was it? 2242, when the Minbari War started. I'm trying to remember my history here.
Well,
anyway,
it's been 10 years since the Earth-Minbari War in 2257, so 2247
is when the war ended.
Right.
And the war had lasted a couple of years.
I need to get the timeline book.
Yeah.
By the way, if anybody is out there and wants to, like, send stuff, I really need that timeline book that's on beefstrifescripts.com.
You know, Christmas is, well, a long ways from now, but we can pretend. We have an imagination. Christmas in February.
That's true. I've got the quote book and all of the script books. Oh, by the way, if you can, go pick up the Other Voices Volume 2 and just look at some of the people who did the interview for Mrs. JMS. You might notice someone in there. That's all I'm going to say.
Okay. Shameless self-promotion.
That's right. Hey, I don't get money from it. Joe does. So that's okay.
Right,
and the other outriders. Okay, so they have kidnapped him, and they're using the mind probe. And yes, I do realize that even as I say that, every Doctor Who fan out there is going, no, not the mind probe. And that's okay. I know that people who haven't seen Doctor Who are going, what? And that's okay.
What? That's where I'm at.
Yeah. They use a mind probe and enter Sinclair's mind to find out.
I think he just tried that. He walked onto the set one day and said, I'm going to say my name differently today. Just watch. Sinclair.
Well, that's like Bruce Boxleitner when he's doing Sinclair to maintenance. Oh.
Yeah. If you don't know what that is, guys, that's in the blooper reel, which you can see on YouTube, where Sheridan refers to himself as Sinclair.
Yeah.
And my God, the rest of the cast and crew did not forgive him for it, never let him live it down. It was hilarious.
Well, there was a reason for that.
Probably.
It was an intentional blooper, and it just showed how good he was.
Yeah.
Anyway, so back to this. They're trying to figure out what exactly.
This is like a really deep, powerful episode, and we're just in joking mood right now.
Well, yeah.
All right, so we're finally getting. We're finally cutting through and figuring out, okay.
What happened?
Yeah, Sinclair's ship went off the scanners for 24 hours at the end of the Battle of the Line. He has no memory. All he knows is that he was on the line, that everywhere he looked, his squadron was being destroyed. They're around Earth in a last ditch, desperate attempt to defend Earth, knowing that there's no possible way they could survive. The Minbari War has emaciated the Earth Alliance military.
Yep. As he put it, the sky was full of stars, and every star was a ship that was exploding,
and it was all
humans.
Yeah, and you know, it was a slaughter. It was a bloodbath. And as we know, Sinclair had. His fighter was damaged, and he decided he was going to go out in any way he could, and he was going to take some of them with him. So he set his fighter to ram the main Minbari cruiser, and he was just about to hit. He was looking at what he thought was the end of his life, and all of a sudden, he just wakes up 24 hours later.
And the Minbari have surrendered.
And the war is over.
And he's been
no one knows why.
And he's been trying to figure out it himself. All this time, it's been 10 years. He still has no idea. As they said way back in the gathering, there's a hole in your mind.
And there's been other things, recurring themes throughout episodes leading up to this. Why Sinclair is starting to ask himself, why do I have this job? Sinclair was not especially prestigious in his career.
Sinclair is a commander. They went with generals, with admirals, with people that were out there that had big names and important titles, and every single one the Minbari rejected because the Minbari co-financed this station, the building of the station, the fifth one, the cheapest of them all. And one of the reasons that they did was because they wanted rejection rights. They wanted some control over who would be in command. And they rejected dozens of names until they finally got down to Sinclair. And for him, they said yes.
And there's an element of suspicion on the part of those like Knight One and Knight Two who have arrived, who have succeeded somehow in just very easily kidnapping the commander of the station.
Right.
That's fine. We're just going to assume that they're just really good at what they do. You know, they were sent by some secretive faction of the government who have, you know, kidnapped him. And
yeah, we still don't have any idea who it was that actually sent them.
Yeah. And I'm going to guess it was probably someone in Psi-Corps. But anyway,
if it was someone in Psi-Corps, why wouldn't they just scan him?
Because if they sent a telepath, then they'd probably be able to trace it back to Psi-Corps. Anyway, my point is that there's suspicion. The Minbari have co-financed this station. The Minbari have rights over, you know, rejecting who runs the place. You know, and to the more paranoid types, like, you know, I'm not going to say this was Home Guard. Home Guard is just a loose band of misfit racists. But, you know, that same sentiment exists in other higher echelons of EarthGov. And so there's paranoia there. Why did the Minbari surrender? They didn't, you know, they don't think that it was just to save humanity. They think it was because they wanted to sort of slowly enter into a more subversive type of warfare where they sort of corrupt, quote-unquote, human culture and sort of tear us down from the inside, being more patient about it so they can maybe cut down on the loss of Minbari life. That's what obviously that's not the case, but that's what people think. And even if people aren't necessarily bigots, violent, radical racists, you know, whatever, xenophobes as they call them on Babylon 5, that is a legitimate train of thought. You know, if the Minbari are just going to call this war off right at the very last second without any explanation and then start to take a very involved role in Earth policy, that's going to raise some questions, especially if the reason for the ending of the war was never explained, never illustrated. And so now we've got these two that have captured Sinclair. He's the one who just disappeared for that 24 hours, so it's assumed there's something in his mind that can answer this question. Why did the Minbari surrender? So that's sort of the basis for this entire interrogation, which takes place in Sinclair's mind.
And we find out later on that Sinclair had met Delenn before, only he didn't remember that he had met her. And they had some kind of little triangle thing that they held up to him while he was on their ship, and it glowed. It was all sparkly glowy, and he has no idea why.
None of these images really mean much.
Right. All he knows is that he has seen Delenn, and he now knows the name Satai. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the episode, he asks the computer, what does Satai mean, and finds out it's part of the ruling council.
And that is when Sinclair himself discovers her involvement with the Great Council. And this is, what, 8 episodes in. You know, mm-hmm. we as an audience discover in episode 2, Soul Hunter.
Right.
And but now Sinclair is starting to put things together to the best of his ability.
Yep.
So, yeah, really, really well orchestrated episode. You know, we've got Knight One, who is actually conducting the interrogation. And Knight One is performed by
Christopher Neame,
who was going to be, as we discussed earlier, this
Walter.
Walter, yeah. And
You want me to take on the cast now?
Yeah.
Okay. This was written by Joe. It was directed by Janet Greek. This is the first time that she directed an episode. She is another one of the stable of directors who comes along and performs brilliantly every time. Christopher Neame played the Knight One. He did a few episodes of Murder, She Wrote. He was in Earth 2. He was in an episode of Voyager called Heroes and Demons. It's the episode that had Marjorie Monaghan as the love interest for the Doctor. Marjorie Monaghan, of course, was number one on Babylon 5. He also did a variety of characters on MacGyver. Judson Scott played the other Knight. His big role was as Khan's number one in Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan. He was also Lieutenant James in V, and he did episodes of Next Gen and Voyager. His last credited role was in 2002. Jim Youngs plays Frank Benson. He is best known as Chuck in Footloose, and he is the brother of actor John Savage. Justin Williams played, and I love the name of this character, Mitchell. He was also Jarvin in Voyager. Joe Banks played one of the guards. He was also in Toy Soldiers with Will Wheaton. And Fumi Shishino was a security guard. She was also in Chrysalis. And I point this out for one specific reason. She's the one who, when the elevator opens and Garibaldi is lying there, she screams. On New Year's Eve, someone is possibly drunk and passed out in the elevator, and she screams. That's why I remember her. Now, if you pay attention to the newspaper that Garibaldi is reading, it's called Universe Today. And if you freeze frame and blow up the image, zoom in, you can get the headlines that he is reading in that particular Universe Today. One of them is Home Guard Leader Found Guilty in Attack on Minbari Embassy. Another one, PsyCor Illegally Backed Vice President Clark in the Recent Elections. Now, this is not something that's even been brought out yet, but you can see it in the newspaper headline already. There is a special section on the pros and cons of interspecies mating.
And that reminds me of an episode of Crusade with the porn.
Yeah.
The Babylon 5 spinoff episode had somebody
Pac
had
Marat.
Pac Marat porn.
Like, who's your little Pac Marat? I still remember the music there.
Oh, Jesus.
Anyway. And then the one that I love, San Diego, still considered too radioactive for occupancy. There's actually a story behind
San
Diego. San
Diego was bombed, a nuclear attack, by terrorists in the Babylon 5 story. So
right, and that was all because Joe had been mugged in San Diego, and that was his revenge.
I didn't know that, really?
Yeah. That's why he decided in the future San Diego is going to be bombed. It's going to be too radioactive for anyone to live there, so it won't happen to anyone else again.
For a long time.
That's right.
And this Universe Today is really cool. Somebody on the Babylon 5 production team had fun with this. You can just tell. You know, like copyright trial continues in Book Zap Flap. I don't even know what that means. Books downloaded directly into brain. Who owns them? I hadn't even noticed this. Is there something living in hyperspace? Now, this is a little bit ominous because, you know, we're starting to hear the rumors. You know, there's something brewing out there, something kind of scary, something dark, something big, and it's just got people talking, and people, type of thing that people tend to talk about in just whispers, and nobody wants to really bring this up, so, but it's starting to surface a little bit. Is there something living in hyperspace?
And the Narn settling the Ragesh 3 controversy.
That goes back to Midnight on the firing line. Let's see what else we got here. A new binary star discovers. See, I like astronomy. Ever since pretty much I got into Babylon 5 when I was like, what, 13, I also got into amateur astronomy. I'd get these big telescopes and set them out on my dad's driveway and look up in space and learn about constellations and stars. So it's one of the reasons I like sci-fi so much is because people actually take real scientific knowledge and incorporate it into things like this. So, yeah, according to this University Today headline, they've discovered a new binary star. Let's see what else have we got. PsyCorp, Election Tangle, San Diego, Home Card. Ooh, zero gravity tennis results.
boingy, boingy, boingy.
Yeah. Do they have like a circular tennis court, you know, so the ball can just go every which way?
Oh, I'm sure they do.
Dude, I want to see this. Let's see what else we got. There's got to be more to talk about. This episode was pretty momentous.
And there's also EA president promises balanced budget. By 2260.
Well, they won't stop promising that until the end of time.
Well, the thing about that is it ties in just a few episodes later when they have that budget crisis on Babylon 5 because they have no money. Mm. The budget is not balanced and it's all the senator's fault.
The senator. Well, you know, I think we're out of gas on this one. This was a great episode, I think. You know, it was a great episode, period.
Yes.
And it really kind of fleshed out some of the story arc.
But there is an A plot line, and then there's a couple D plot lines. There's no real B plot line. Usually there's an A, a B, and a C, where A is the most important. B still has a lot of screen time, and then C, there's a little bit. Well, in this, there's a couple D plot lines that are just kind of thrown in there. They're important, but they tie into the A plot line of Sinclair getting kidnapped, and then we find out what happened at the Battle of the Line. But really, that's what people watch for in this episode, in The Sky Full of Stars. They're watching to find out what happened at the Battle of the Line. What is this whole Sinclair thing about? Sinclair thing. I can't help it. It's funny. What is that all about? The rest of the stuff, okay. So there's a security guard that is gambling. Well, whoop-de-doo. I don't care.
That's a pretty menial little thing for them to have to deal with, isn't it?
Right. It does eventually tie in.
If it's gotten so bad that he's being brought before the commander of the station to address his gambling problem, you've got to imagine there's been some pretty bad screw-ups somewhere along the line.
Right. But still, as far as plot lines, who cares?
Yeah, well, it gave a little bit of relative dimension to that character, I guess. It made it believable.
The whole point of that character was they eventually used him to power the thing that the mind broke.
Right.
Well, I'm sure they could have found something else to do. That was just his way of saying, okay, this is how they got the power.
Okay.
So, yeah, whatever.
What was the other D plot line? I don't... Let's see.
It ties in with the A plot line, and that D plot line is Delenn with crazy Sinclair at the end going, it's me, Commander. Sinclair going, I know you. I know who you are. And Delenn going, I'm your friend. Ambassador Delenn, I'm your friend. And he goes, no, I know you. I know you. And he remembers taking down her cloak or whatever and seeing her face.
While he was kidnapped and aboard the Minbari vessel.
Right. And here she is. She's still bald, Delenn, but... You know, that's kind of a D plot. It kind of ties in with the A. It's not really its own thing, but it hinges on everything else.
Now, the very end of the episode, we've got Delenn in her quarters, and she's approached by another member of the Grey Council who informs her that if Sinclair is ever to remember exactly what happened and why it happened, that he'd have to be killed.
Right.
So this episode does delve fairly deeply into the truth surrounding the end of the Minbari War. But it raises more questions than it answers.
Which is usual with Babylon 5.
Yeah. All right, everybody. Thank you for listening. Interact with us. Talk to us. Make this fun for everyone.
Please.
We'll have a blast together.
And if you'd like to email in your voice comments. We'd love to play them on the show. Again, that's MitchOnTheStation@gmail.com or
SteveOnTheStation@gmail.com.
And we're out.
Bye-bye. Thank you for listening.
Station podcast was recorded and produced and edited by Jeff Finn at Infinite Productions in 2009.
The station.